You're listening once again to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Always have been, always will be. I wonder how many of you called the Justice Department, the FBI, your representative, your senator, and demanded that the legal brief that the Freeman gave to the FBI and asked the Justice Department to rule upon be released to the public, and demanded that they rule upon each point of law in that brief in order to bring this thing to a close, because as soon as that's done, the Freemen have given their word, they will walk out. How many of you have done that? I'll bet you, anything you want to bet, that most of you never picked up your phone to do any such thing of the kind, because you don't give a damn, you're apathetic, and ladies and gentlemen, when it all comes down, just like Waco, you're going to say, well, you know, if I'd known beforehand, I would have done something. You're a liar. You would have done something. You would have already done it. Now, I'm going to tell you again. This is the answer to the whole thing. The Freemen have given their word. They will come out peacefully and surrender if the Justice Department releases their legal brief to the public and rules upon the points of law which they have included in that brief. So you get off your lazy butts and start calling, and let's bring this thing to a close peacefully. It doesn't matter which way the Justice Department rules. They have said they will come out. And if they come out, they'll have a chance to prove the legality of all of it in court. But I got to tell you that right now, I don't think they're going to have any problem proving that what they did was within the scope of the Uniform Commercial Code and the statutes and the law that the Federal Reserve System uses. Doesn't make it right. For if they have condemned the Federal Reserve for doing all of this, what makes them think they're right for doing the same thing? That's my point. And there's a whole bunch more. They've totally, totally angered everyone who lives around them, stolen land from them, and all kinds of stuff. And I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, this is not hypothetical rhetoric. It's true. We've conducted a thorough investigation. They will, if they ever get a chance or a judge that will hear it properly, prove that the FBI has no jurisdiction up there whatsoever. In one instance, the FBI has blocked off a road, a highway in the state of Montana, and is stopping everybody that comes along against the law. And if they have a weapon in their car, they will not allow them to proceed against the Constitution of the state of Montana. And that's supposed to be the supreme law of the land. The FBI has no jurisdiction off of federal property. But yet the state of Montana is allowing this to happen. What's going on? So get involved. Let's bring this to a close. Let's get it in the court. Let's get these issues heard. Let's get it out in the open so everybody knows what's happening. Let's get this legal brief that the Freemen have given to the FBI and to the Justice Department released to the public so that we can find out what's true and what's not true. And if you don't care, then why don't you just, you know, turn off your radio? Why don't you write me a letter? Tell me to go on with my life, and let's all quit this asinine bullshit. Okay? And if it's not asinine bullshit, let's get real. Let's do it, folks. Let's do what is necessary. Let's be responsible. And while we're at it, let's go to Phoenix and get the metal report. Good evening, Frank.
Good evening. get some things off your chest this evening?
Oh, I'm always getting some things off my chest. I'm so angry with the way people, they spout off their mouth when it comes time to do something. They're just a bunch of ninny children, lying wimps.
I deal with a lot of them. I mean, a lot of them can't even turn their Federal Reserve notes into something real. I mean, how can you expect them to get involved in something this significant and leave their name, in essence, that seemingly supports the activities of the, these guys in Montana?
Oh, if I got in their garage and took one of their cars away from them, they'd get involved, wouldn't they?
Sure. You bet they would.
Or what are their television sets?
They just don't understand how really weak the New World Order is, and by being careful, how much power they're assigning to it.
Oh, Frank, let me assure you 100% that they understand completely. They also understand how cowardly they are and how weak they want to be. What they really don't understand and what they don't want to confront is how strong they can be, because it requires risk.
That, you know, it does. It does require risk. I will not dispute that. And significant risk. But the bottom line is, if we all take these risks together, we'll be fine.
Are we hanged together?
Exactly. And that ain't going to happen. As long as we stick together and we got the law on our side, which we do in most cases.
That's correct.
Now, we're going to be just fine out of this. Well, anyway, I can see on my, while I've been away, not a whole lot really has changed. The stock market's not doing much of anything except going up and down and fairly volatile swings. It's failed to confirm its previous highs. But what has occurred that, you know, is everything that we said would occur. The economy boost, okay, when they issued the new currency, we talked about how it would basically loosen money supply. I'd like to thank Richard in Ohio for that. He was right on the money. Pardon the pun. But he was right on with that. That's exactly what it's done. The headlines while I was away, we'd catch a newspaper here and there. Economy gets, you know, boost and all this soft landing nonsense and the rest of it.
But it's a false boost, because we also said that it would cause inflation.
Which it has.
It has caused a lot of inflation.
A lot of inflation. It's interesting. You know, when we finally break out the numbers, you know, the Treasury Department releases this number and that number, and they say, well, somewhere in this range, the average is 21%, okay, that they've talked about with increasing, with boosting the money supply, the currency supply. Well, what is it? What have we seen happen? We've seen commodities go up basically 21%. They want to raise the minimum wage 21%. I mean, how obvious can we, how can they be with this?
What I want to know is, how stupid can the American people be?
Well, unfortunately, quite stupid. They want to listen to some fancy explanation from some talking head on CNBC or CNN or whatever, and they want, oh, no, you can't be right. Oh, it's because of this, it's because of that, it's because of the winter shortages, or, you know, they come up with all these bizarre reasons for it to be, and they fail to look at the most simple explanation that there is.
Are the talking hairless rughead, Dan Rather?
Yeah, no kidding.
What a fake hairpiece.
Yeah, well,
why can't this guy get real? I mean, they're all so phony. They lie. They cheat. Instead of being what they are, they put on hairpieces that are so obvious, it's pathetic.
Think about it, Bill. Obvious hairpiece. What does it do? It makes you feel sorry for him, right?
Doesn't make me feel sorry. It makes me disgusted.
Well, sure. You and I look at things differently, and a lot of listeners do. But the vast majority of Americans that are sheep, okay, they look at it and they feel sorry for him. And they'll tend to, you know, put their heart on their sleeve for him. They'll tell he's bearing his soul. He can't even go out and get a good hairpiece, kind of a...
The guy makes $2 million a year.
I know. Well, it's all part of a game. The subtle mind games that go on with these talking heads. But, you know, that's where we're at. You know, we're in a situation right now where we've got, if we look historically at the situation, according to Barron's, okay, someone employed in manufacturing, your average blue-collar worker, in 1929, it took him basically 1.25 weeks to be able to earn enough money to buy one share of the S&P 500. Well, guess what? Today, this year, it takes the same amount of work to get the same share. So you cannot tell me that the stock market is the place to be. You cannot tell me that there is no inflation when it takes the same amount of work as it did in 1929 just to get that one share in the S&P 500.
At the same time, it takes much more time to realize the American dream, to buy an automobile, to own a home, many other things that, that years ago people were able to do with honest work in a very short period of time. And the American dream was real for everyone. It's not real for everyone today.
Now, in the inflation scenario, okay, there was a bear market in 1966. In 1995, we saw some fairly large gains in the Dow. When you use inflation-adjusted numbers, you finally saw a recovery to the pre-bear market collapse, 1966. That's how bad inflation has been. The Treasury Department, Wall Street Journal, had an article today. Treasury plans to sell inflation-indexed bonds. If there's no inflation, why do they need to do this? They're just drawing people in. Well, an interesting point is the vast majority of our debt used to be held by private entities. It is now held by global central banks. The bankers own it all right now. They control it all right now. What we see in the stock market is a lot of corporate selling by the CEOs, by the people that are high in the corporate structure. They're selling their stock shares. The company itself is buying it back. The company is buying ownership. They get to write that stuff off. So they're getting their, everything is laying in wait right now. Everything is making its, well, completing the circle in essence, because these people are getting ready for a very bad occurrence. Why else would they sell their stock shares? If they're so lucrative, why would the CEO of a company get rid of his stock share? There's something that's extremely wrong with this whole situation right now. 1929, another example, about 3 months prior to the collapse, they came out with a new currency, a new contract, a new Federal Reserve note, just like we've recently had here past March 25th. We are living in very interesting times, and that's a significant understatement. We saw another Wall Street firm jump on the gold bandwagon, Barton Biggs. He's the global strategist for Morgan Stanley. They just took a $1 billion position in gold. This is from the May 7th Wall Street Journal. So everybody's getting ready. All the big guys are getting ready. If you little people out there haven't gotten ready, you need to do so. It's real simple. The writing's been on the wall for a long time. You need to get it done. It's good enough for Barton Biggs. It's good enough for Morgan Stanley. It's good enough for you.
It's always been good enough for me.
Yeah. I got an interesting quote. Maybe you can. It's going to be interesting to see how many people figure out who said this. In the absence of the gold standard, there is no way to protect savings from confiscation through inflation. There is no safe store of value. Deficit spending is simply a scheme for the hidden confiscation of wealth. Gold stands in the way of this insidious process. It stands as a protector of property rights. Wild guess?
Well, in the first place, I have to tell you that the statement is false, for the United States has never been on a gold standard. The coin of the realm, the money of account defined in the law, has always been $1, a silver dollar, or an equivalent value of gold. But it's always been based upon silver. So whoever said that was wrong. A lot of people are wrong. They always thought we were on a gold standard. We never were. It's just that the United States government froze the price of silver and gold during most of its history and dictated exactly what the measurement and weight and purity of silver and gold would be in a coin. But the law is based upon a silver dollar, not a gold dollar.
I agree. But gold is, the political, the monetary. But Alan Greenspan said that 30 years ago.
That's great. Write that down, put it in an envelope, and send it to me.
I will do so.
I'll use that all the time.
I will do so.
I'll publish it in the front page of Veritas and send it to his office.
Yeah, especially since he's the one who wants to have these inflation-adjusted index bonds. Unbelievable. A little interesting tidbit from the former Soviet Union. Okay, the economy collapsed in 1993. They've had a very rough go of it. From 1917 to this day, in Russia, you're not allowed to own gold bullion. It's always been, that's been the case. After they killed their enemies, the communists, took over the gold. But there's always been allowances made for collectible coins. Recent article in Coin World magazine talking about the Russian coin market. It's basically, the Russian market is like mealtime at the zoo, a feeding frenzy. With the inflation that they have over there, the only tangible asset that they are allowed to own is gold in its collectible form. You know, it's, a lot of people are saying, no, I don't want to do that. Well, the fact of the matter is it's historically documented. It's all over the globe. It is a very viable alternative. And the former Soviet Union is a prime example, especially with what they're going through right now and what they've been going through.
Well, the Federal Reserve is also shipping them just about, a few million dollars every day.
You know, pieces of paper.
And $100 bills.
Yeah.
And that's really what's fueling the collapsed, so-called collapsed economy over there. Unfortunately, it's being delivered to the Illuminati-controlled underworld. So it doesn't help the average citizen.
No, it doesn't.
This helps the robber barons. Well, you got any last comments to close with?
Well, not really. I mean, my time away was well spent. I got to spend it with a Special Forces Operational Detachment Alpha. I got to go out in the field with an A-team for a couple of weeks. The things that I saw, things that I listened to and talked to these guys about, it's very significant. When you understand some things, some concepts, just as you cannot take and find out the area of a circle without knowing a constant, without knowing pi, you cannot understand and grasp the New World Order without understanding a couple concepts, and that's Ordo et Deo, and the fact that you've got a couple major factions that are in opposition to each other. And when you plug that into your equation, when you plug those concepts into your equation, everything falls right into place. Very interesting to see that the establishment wants special forces done away with, period. The military, on the other hand, which happens to be another side of the fight, is expanding it, but they're also trying to water it down. The type of people that they're attempting to place in there, and it's not working, I can vouch for that, are those that just blindly follow orders. Well, that ain't happening. But it is intriguing to see how these guys, what they're trained to do, what they're trained to operate as, is going behind the lines and being a force multiplier. And I got to watch the process from beginning to end. One of the first things they do is they make a list, a payroll list, that they send back to headquarters. One of the last things they do, it's called demobilization, is take the guns away. After the war, after the battles are won, okay, we got it under control now, you guys can go home. Give us your guns.
Good luck.
That's exactly what was the very interesting point, because the guys on the team, even though they were instructed to do that, didn't. Wouldn't. The instructors said, it's not your problem. Real world scenario, it's not your problem.
Real world scenario is if they try, and I don't care how well trained they are or what kind of special forces they are or anything else. Real world scenario is there isn't a force, a military force upon the face of this earth that can deal with an armed American populace in a guerrilla warfare.
That's a fact.
And it's suicide to even attempt it, and they know it. That's why they have this great campaign on to disarm the American people. They know they'll lose the battle if they fail to get the guns out of the hands of the American people, and I'm going to tell you right now, it ain't going to happen.
No. You know, they might get some. They might get those people that are not inclined to do anything anyway, who don't understand really and truly what's going on.
They'll get the guns from the fools, the cowards.
Any assistance anyway.
And the people that believe in go along to get along.
Exactly. But the bottom line is, this whole situation is destined to lose. And it was just interesting to sit around the campfires and listen to the discussion, because every one of these people was fully cognizant of the quote-unquote New World Order and would not partake in it. Okay? That was the most encouraging thing I've seen.
Well, unlike you and many others, I don't listen to what people say. I watch what they do.
Yeah.
When they align themselves with freedom, with the militias, and when they do the right thing, then and only then will I believe them.
Mm-hmm.
Until then, I don't believe a word anyone says. I just listen and watch. And what they do tells me what the truth really is as far as who they are, and what they believe in. Thank you so much, Frank.
All right, Bill.
Take care. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Call Swiss America Trading, folks. Ask for Frank. 1-800-289-2646. Do it tonight. You know how you are. You know how we all are. We all tend to procrastinate. Don't go away. I'll be right back with a very interesting broadcast that you don't want to miss. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's broadcast is about the Rosicrucian philosophy. And I can touch in the beginning and put my thumb upon the very fundamental fault of this Rosicrucian philosophy, the Rose and Cross. For there is literally nothing that these people cannot and do not explain. All based upon your willingness to believe, no proof whatsoever. In fact, most of it flies in the face of common sense, and much of it can be easily disproven very quickly. You have to marvel at the patient digging and the interminable babbling that produces a never-ending stream of facts and subjects all fitting neatly within the confines of this all-absorbing system. And of course, there's no argument against information that obtains from an occult source. For if you do not believe it, you simply are on the outside. You're one of the profane. If you are investigative-minded or scientifically oriented, and you really investigate and you really listen and apply what they teach to known facts, history, to science, to the real world, very, very quickly can put them in the garbage can where they belong. The name of this organization itself is an apt illustration of the uncanny ability to interpret all things and make them fit, whether they do or not. It so happens that in the 13th century, a man named Christian Rosenkreutz, whether he ever existed or not, is open to debate. For nobody can prove that he ever even lived. In fact, many assert that he is nothing but a legend created by the mystery school in order to disguise the fact that this was not a new religion, was not a new teaching, but was the same old mystery religion of Babylon in a slightly different form. But nevertheless, the same. This Christian Rosenkreutz, according to the story, the legend, began to bring out into the open teachings which hitherto had been promulgated only in secret, but nobody ever met him. Nobody ever saw him. Nobody ever knew him. All they saw was a paper supposedly written by him, which has been disputed by every authority since then. Supposedly, he began to bring out in the open teachings which hitherto had been promulgated only in secret. Christian Rosenkreutz. What a name to conjure with. What a name. He founded the mysterious order of the Rosicruci, out of which grew the Rosicrucians and the AMORC, the ancient and mystical order of the Rosencross, all aligned against each other, but teaching very closely the exact same thing. What is the difference? Well, the original order, supposedly founded by Christian Rosenkreutz, the Rosicruci, is a secret order to which no one is admitted except by invitation only. The AMORC is an order existing in California to which anyone can apply and obtain the first 9 degrees, and if they want to go higher, then that's by submission for an application and then ultimate approval. And of course, there is the third, the Rosicrucians, which is pretty much open to just about anybody. Supposedly, Christian Rosenkreutz founded the mysterious order of the Rosicruci with the object of throwing occult light upon the supposed misunderstood Christian religion and to explain the mystery of life and being from the scientific standpoint in harmony with religion. But we all know that cannot be, because religion, by its very nature, is based upon an article of faith and has nothing to do with whatsoever with any scientific principle. Whatever you want to believe can be a religion based upon the fact that you have faith in that belief and therefore follow the teachings that your faith and that belief dictate. Whether you think it up or somebody else thinks it up, it doesn't make any difference. That's really the definition of religion. It's completely separate from science. And to this day, science and religion have never been reconciled, and there doesn't seem to be any hope that they ever will. Although, it would be nice if they could. But all of this, it will be seen, might have been written by Theosophical Rogers, or maybe a Senate, all except for the symbolical name Christian Rosenkreutz. Rosenkreutz, of course, means Rosen Cross. And Christian should be obvious to anyone. Christian, Rose, and Cross. The Rosicrucians have taken the offense out of the cross, and they call that esoteric Christianity. The cross should not be interpreted as an emblem of suffering and shame. The Rosicrucians, the AMORC, it doesn't make any difference. Even though they claim they've taken the offense out of the cross, and that the cross should not be interpreted as an emblem of suffering and shame, in the esoteric readings of their own orders, the cross blatantly stands for the crucifixion of the soul. In other words, a life without trials and sorrow cannot be a perfected life, for only out of those experiences can come the perfection of the soul. So they lie to what they call the profane, and they tell the truth, of course, to the higher initiates. Never to the lower initiates, who aren't initiates at all, of course. So, if they don't believe that the cross should be interpreted as an emblem of suffering and shame, what then did and does it stand for? Well, you can ask Plato, who was an initiate. He was an initiate, and I've covered that many times on this broadcast. And he wrote, quote, "The world soul is crucified," end quote. With these words, he informs us, ladies and gentlemen, this Greek philosopher gave out the occult truth. And what is that truth? Very simply this, that the cross is symbolical of the life currents vitalizing the bodies of plants, animal, and men. End quote. But it's only the truth if you believe in this secret religion. You see, it is symbolical to them of man's past evolution, present constitution, and future development, all based upon experience and learning through suffering, through the trials and tribulations of the reborn soul and the never-ending condition of reincarnation, suffering, learning from that suffering, dying, being reborn again, bringing that knowledge into your new life, and trying over and over again to protect and perfect your soul in order to climb up the ladder of reincarnation and reach what they call the Godhead, and then eventually merge as one with God and become God yourself. Boy, I didn't know if I was going to get through that properly, but I did. And it's only because I've studied it for so many years that I was able to. Because I wasn't reading from anything, ladies and gentlemen. I was reciting from my personal knowledge. When you study this, you'll find the same end as I have just related to you. It is symbolical of man's past evolution, present constitution, and of course future development. They believe that the mineral kingdom ensouls all chemical substance of whatever kind, so that the cross of whatever material it is made is first symbol of that kingdom.
The upright lower limb of the cross is a symbol of the plant kingdom to these people, because the currents of the group spirits, which they say give life to the plants, come from the center of the earth, where these group spirits are located and reach out toward the periphery of our plant. The growing vegetable kingdom, and into space. Now you already know why this is so easy to disprove. Because that is nothing but bullshit babble. The upper limb of the cross, they say, is the symbol of man, because the life currents of the human kingdom pass downward from the sun through the vertical spine, and now you're getting in line with the mystical teachings of the mystery religion of Babylon throughout time. The sun, the manifestation of God's power, where the life currents of the human kingdom pass downward from the sun through the vertical spine, knowing that without the sun, no life could exist upon this earth. Thus man is the inverted plant, they say. For as the plant takes its food through the root, passing it upward, so does the man take his nourishment by way of the head, passing it downward. And that is the esoteric meaning when you see in these mystical publications an illustration of a tree upside down with its roots in the air and its leaves and its branches blooming with flowers beneath the earth. They say the plant is chaste, pure, and passionless, and stretches its creative organ, the flower, chastely and unashamed toward the sun, a thing of beauty and delight, the manifestation of God's power which gives life to this earth. Man inhales the life, giving oxygen, and exhales the poisonous carbon dioxide, which is a false statement, ladies and gentlemen. Because when man inhales the life-giving oxygen, it is only life-giving to man and animals. When he exhales the supposed poisonous carbon dioxide, he is exhaling what the plant kingdom and the vegetable kingdom actually thrive upon. Therefore, it is not poisonous, but is merely a waste product of man and animals. And oxygen is not a generative, life-giving force, except to man and animals. For to the plant kingdom, it is their waste product. So neither oxygen nor carbon dioxide are poisonous or life-giving, but are merely the way that nature takes its balance. And that is what these fools don't understand. And they are fools for believing all this gobbledygook. It takes an uninformed, immature mind to bite on obviously untrue statements, assertions, and when they can't even pass the test of common sense, what do you have? Nothing is the answer. They say that man inhales the life-giving oxygen and exhales the poisonous carbon dioxide. The plant takes the poison exhaled by man, but if the plant takes it, it cannot be poison. So their statement is a lie. The plant builds its body therefrom, the carbon dioxide, and the sustenance taken up by its roots from the earth. And the byproduct is oxygen. They say that the plant is returning to us, mankind, the elixir of life, the cleansed oxygen. Between the plant and the human kingdom stands the animal with the horizontal spine, and in the horizontal spine, the life currents of the animal group, spirit, play as they circle around the globe, according to these people. Not understanding, of course, that man himself is an animal. Therefore, they say the horizontal limb of the cross is the symbol of the animal kingdom. Quote, the animal, which is symbolized by the horizontal limb of the cross, is between plant and man. Its spine is in horizontal position, and through it play the currents of animal group spirit, which encircle the earth. Quote, to keep him steadfast and true through adversity, the rose cross holds aloft as an inspiration the glorious consummation in store for him that overcometh, and points to Christ as the star of hope, the first fruits, who wrought that choicest of all gems, the philosopher's stone, while inhabiting the body of Jesus. And that should give you some clue, ladies and gentlemen, that they do not believe that Jesus Christ was the Son of God, born in the flesh, lived, taught, and died for the forgiveness of sins, was dead 3 days, and arose again in the body, and then ascended into heaven. They don't believe that. You see, what they believe is that Jesus was just a body like any other body on this earth. And his soul was snatched from that body. And this soul that is the office holder of the Christ came down and inhabited the body of Jesus in order to teach man the gnosis, or knowledge. And you wouldn't have known that if I had not interpreted what they just said there to you. Let me read it to you again, and after you have heard the interpretation, you will understand exactly what it means. To keep him steadfast and true through adversity, and only adversity can create the knowledge that enables the perfection of the soul. The rose cross holds aloft as an inspiration the glorious consummation in store for him that overcometh, and points to Christ as the star of hope, the first fruits, who wrought that choicest of all gems, the philosopher's stone, which is code for the perfection of the soul, while inhabiting the body of Jesus. So what they're saying is some outside force came and inhabited this body of Jesus, took his soul and put it somewhere else. And in that body, through the suffering that Christ underwent, perfected that soul in order to give gnosis, or knowledge, or learning to the human race. It has nothing to do with God being born incarnate in the flesh through a virgin birth on this earth, living, teaching, and dying for the forgiveness of sins, being 3 days within the tomb, rising in the body, and then ascending into heaven. That's not what they're talking about. And they claim that they're Christian. So this then interprets the Rosicrucian emblem, the cross, as well as the star against which it stands, the star being, of course, the rose, while the garland of roses around the center of the cross points to yet another symbolism. And I quote, in the form where it is represented with a single rose in the center, it symbolizes the spirit radiating from itself the four vehicles, the dense, vital, and desire bodies, plus the mind, where the Spirit has drawn into its instruments and become the indwelling human spirit. But there was a time when that condition did not obtain, a time when the threefold spirit hovered above its vehicles and was unable to enter. Then the cross stood alone, without the rose, symbolizing the condition which prevailed in the early third of Atlantis. There was even a time when the upper limb of the cross was lacking, and man's constitution was represented by the tau, RT, upon the top of the center, instead of in the upper third. That was in the Lemurian epoch, when he had only the dense, vital, and desire bodies, but lacked the mind. Then the animal nature was paramount. Man followed desire without reserve. At a still earlier time, in the Hyperborean epoch, he was also minus the desire body and possessed only the dense and vital bodies. Then man, in the making, was like the plants, chaste and devoid of desire. At that time, his constitution could not have been represented by a cross. It was symbolized by a straight shaft, a pillar, the letter I. Thought and voice, we are told further by these people, are both creative, but the selfish, dominating creative faculty, symbolized by the larynx at the crossing of head and body, must give way to a less selfish, creative force. It is here that the roses enter. The rose, like any other flower, is the generative organ of the plant. Do you understand what I just said? The obelisk, the phallus, the penis of Osiris. Its green stem carries the colorless, passionless plant blood. The blood-red rose shows the passion-filled blood of the human race. But in the rose, the vital fluid is not sensuous. It is chaste and pure, without the sexual desire. Just like I've taught you on past episodes of The Hour of the Time, and especially during the Mystery Babylon series. Thus, it is an excellent symbol of the generative organ in the pure and holy state to which man will attain when he has cleansed and purified his blood of desire, when he has become chaste, pure, and Christ-like, when man himself is God. Now I bet you're beginning to get the message, huh? Yeah, I bet you are. So, now we get to the cross. The long limb representing the body, the two horizontals, the two arms, and the short upper limb, the head, with the circle of roses around the center rose instead of the larynx. Therefore, the Rosicrucians look ardently forward to the day when the roses shall bloom upon the cross of humanity. Therefore, the elder brothers greet the aspiring soul with the words of the Rosicrucian greeting, quote, "May the roses bloom upon your cross," end quote. And therefore, the greeting is given in the meetings of the fellowship centers by the leader to the assembled students. Probationers. Disciples who respond to the greeting by saying, quote, "And on yours also," end quote. Remember, the soul can only be perfected and become immortal through sacrifice and suffering. It was no coincidence that in the speech given by Bill Clinton at the memorial service for the Oklahoma City bombing victims in Oklahoma City, that he made reference to those who have sacrificed and had in his possession, as did everyone there. They were given it as they entered the hall, one solitary red rose. Through the suffering of those victims would come the perfection of the soul of the world. As I stated earlier, it is the suffering of the soul of the world. Remember that? Shall come the perfection of the soul of the world and the unification of all nations into one totalitarian socialist world government. But you see, if you did not understand the symbology and the hidden esoteric meaning of all of this, you would never know what you are watching and hearing, observing and taking part in and becoming a victim of while it is all taking place. The Oklahoma City Mirror Federal Building was the American Reichstag. It is the cross upon which freedom was sacrificed to bring about the unification of all nations in a one world totalitarian socialist state. The one solitary red rose is also the symbol of international socialism, in case you didn't know. It is all very profound, quite esoteric, which means hidden, a different language. You read one thing, if you don't understand the symbology and the language, and the initiates read quite a different story. It's also eminently fitting the name of Christian Rosenkreutz to the 13th century, perhaps, though the name was not quite as accidental as you may surmise. You see, we're told that this Mr. Rosenkreutz, or rather the ego dwelling in him, or the Christ within, you see, because in the New World Order, all human beings will be entered by the soul possessing the office of the Christ. All will become Christed, and eventually will become God. That's the New World religion. It's the New Age religion. It's what the Vatican is leading you toward. It's what Pat Robertson is teaching you the very beginnings of. And many, many others. Gene Scott. You see, they tell us that this Mr. Christian Rosenkreutz, or rather the ego dwelling in him, the Christ within, was already then a high spiritual leader. His birth as Christian Rosenkreutz merely marked the beginning of a new epoch in spiritual life in the Western world. And he has since that day taken a new body. When his successive vehicles have outlived their usefulness, our circumstances rendered it expedient that he changed the scene of his activities. He is the Maitreya. He is the promised Messiah. He is the Antichrist. He is the liar. He is the deception. And he's not the only one. According to the Rosenkreutz followers, he inspired Bacon's works, although through an intermediary. And he enlightened the mystic Jacob Bohm. He is also embodied today an initiate of high degree, an active and potent factor in all affairs of the West, they say, although unknown to the world. And that was printed, ladies and gentlemen, in the 1944 edition of the Cosmo Conception, published by the Rosenkreuz. In accordance with such symbolism, Christian emblems of long standing are made to fit in with the occult world. Quote, in esotericism, the cross was never looked upon as an instrument of torture, and it was not until the 6th century that the crucified Christ was shown in pictures. Previous to that time, the symbol of the Christ was a cross and a lamb resting upon its foot, to convey the idea that at the time when Christ was born, the sun at the vernal equinox crossed the equator in the sign of Aries the Lamb. Some claim that the vernal equinox at his birth was really in the sign of Pisces, the fishes, and that the symbol of our Savior should have been a fish. It is in memory of that dispute that the bishop's mitre still takes the form of the head of a fish. End quote. Saint John evidently lacked this occult information, and in his ignorance interpreted the lamb in OT style as a sacrifice that takes away the sin of the world. That's Old Testament, for those who don't know what OT means. And the early Christians, who for fear of being betrayed to the enemy, drew a fish in the sand to see if there were an understanding response, interpreted the symbol of the fish as follows. Ichthys, which is Greek for fish. I, which is interpreted as Asos, and CH, Ristos, TH, Al, U, Ios, S. Otter. In effect, Jesus Christ, God's Son, Savior. And that is the truth. The Rosenkreuz is lying. For it is historical fact, not conjecture. We'll continue this tomorrow night. Good night, ladies and gentlemen, and God bless each and every single one of you. If you've never really listened to the lyrics of this song, it's all about the suffering upon the cross of sacrifice, trials and tribulations, the death and rebirth of the perfected soul.
It's the tree.